Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Greetings and welcome to episode 24, I think, of the Believe Knicks podcast.
Our Kobe pod.
Your Kobe pod or Bill Bradley, depending on where you fall on the age spectrum.
On the Knicks spectrum, you're right.
It is episode 24, but in a very BCAD sort of way, it is episode 1 after the season, the postseason, which does not involve the postseason. So we are going to start.
1 AD.
AD. Not AD, not AD. AD. Just AD after that.
After Derek?
After that. It's been that AD has been going on a long time. So we'll start to talk a little bit, look back a little bit, look forward a little bit. But before I do that, we have a new friend today. Our partners at Bet Online continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA playoffs, fights, not NBA fights, I think like other leagues, and even next season's futures. And don't forget that Major League Baseball is back as well. Who are you picking to win the World Series? Who are you picking to win the World Series, Stacey?
The Kansas City Chiefs.
He's not wrong, folks.
I'm not the biggest baseball fan.
I see that now. Bet Online.
I used to be a much bigger fan when I was a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually grew up just about 30 minutes from Yankee Stadium.
Mm.
But then I lived in Queens for a while, so I went to like a bunch of Mets games.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm back in Stamford, which I'm closer to Yankee Stadium. I will probably follow the Yankees here and there this season, but in terms of knowing what's going on, I don't have much of a clue right now.
Well, if you need a clue, BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use the promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. So where the pod starts, Stacey, will be, I think, the season is done. I don't think anyone's really had a chance to come close to fully decompressing, but now that it is over, what issues, stances, feels, vibes are still resonating with you after it's all come to an end?
Yeah, I mean, it's I really think the Knicks are 8-9 deep with young guys who are contributors. When I say young guys, I mean guys on the rookie deal under 25. Mitchell Robinson is soon to be not on a rookie deal and perhaps not on this team.
Mm-hmm.
That's really exciting to me. But I also realized that it's been bittersweet, you know, like, especially as quickly as ascended and Obi has ascended, you know, especially on quickly, you know, I've been even at his lowest points, kind of a defender of his. And as much as it's very gratifying to see him kind of live up to what I always felt he could be, and I think he'd be a lot more too, you know, there is that, you know, because you always see people tweet like, well, have fun while these young guys are here, because sooner or later they're going to be in Utah. And it doesn't seem like, I think in a perfect world, we could see how these 8 or 9 guys with like a couple of vets do together. And it's just like, it's tough for me because I don't see how that happens. And like, I don't know that. I mean, this pats to that. Like, we have Evan Fournier. I'd love to see Cam Reddish do well, but Evan Fournier is a good player. Do we trade him for nothing? That goes for Alec Burks too. I didn't want him starting a point guard. I did want him getting minutes on this team. He's a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of things better than anyone else on the team, including some of the guys I want to get to take some of his minutes. You know, there are guys that I'm kind of, okay, I think I can trade you, namely Kemba and Nerlens. But to make those things happen without bringing in more vets, like how do you get Deuce McBride minutes? How do you even get Cam Reddish minutes? It's tough. And I don't know that there's a, I think it's just a tricky situation. And I don't know how the Knicks play this right now in a way that makes those things happen. And I do worry that they, I mean, either like scorch the earth for Donovan Mitchell, which is like, I would love Donovan Mitchell on this team. But, you know, I also wanted Carmelo Anthony on the team. I don't think the way it happened was necessarily optimal. So I don't, I mean, if they could, it's just a very, it's a tough situation to see how it's going to go forward, but I'm trying at least for the present to focus on the fact that we have 8 or 9 young guys who are all at least rotation level. And, you know, I will argue at that point a lot about all of them.
I would generally feel very pessimistic about the Knicks' chances of not doing like a scorched earth deal for Mitchell. And like when you started talking about the young core, my initial thought was like, okay, but we know that this is basically a franchise for whom youth is, you know, almost like a cross to a vampire. Like, there's, you know, there's the famous Charlie Ward, you know, no one's gotten a second deal since Charlie Ward, but like they don't keep any young ones around. And then I realized, well, wait a minute. And we'll note on your calendars that this is the first and probably last time that I will hypothesize that Jim Dolan might deserve credit for something. When Kevin Durant was nearing free agency a couple seasons ago, and everyone was convinced that the Knicks were going to go after him. And when they didn't get him, it didn't sound like, you know, like a LeBron thing where the Knicks put out all the stops and KD chose the Nets instead. It sounded like a time, and I remember at the time, because I think Mills put out a statement, but the pronoun was very clearly like we. Like, I don't think Dolan wanted to give Durant that money. And I don't have a problem with that. Because if you consider Dolan's ownership tenure, like, he's been burned constantly by big men with injury red flags. So Antoni McDyess came with major red flags and was a disaster. Eddie Curry had an enormous medical red flag because of his heart condition. That's not why he failed in New York, but it was enough of a red flag that the Bulls were very happy to trade him. Amari Stoudemire got a 5-year deal with no injury protections, despite red flags with his knees. We saw where that went. Kristaps Porzingis, everyone knew when he was drafted, like, this is an unusual body. It may not hold up. It didn't hold up. So when they had a chance to sign Durant and everybody was insisting, like, the Knicks are all in under, they want Durant, I respected the fact he might have been wrong, but I respected the fact that Dolan, I think to me, appeared to say, like, I didn't think he was wrong. Like, you have a player coming off some of the foot problems, and I know KD is a different body and everything, but like, so do you think, there's no way to know this, but I'm hopeful that they could sustain the young core, because I would rather see this young core get another 2 years and build around them in the draft and maybe make a couple moves on them, you know, around the team. I would rather see that than watch them trade 4 young players and 3 picks and swaps for Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, I am with you there. It's just tough to see how they make, like, if they draft, like, they have 8 guys plus Mitch, right? Assume, like, without counting the vets.
Right.
And then they're going to draft a lottery player now who you would expect is going to play, like, even they could draft a draft and stash guy. There's guys like Usman Dieng and Nikola Jovic who they could make draft and stash guys, but that's a little unusual in the lottery. The reality is they're probably going to keep at least one of Burks and Fournier. It's not a slam dunk that they're trading Randall, although I think it should be. And for all those trades, it's unlikely that those will all be just for picks, right? There are a few teams that can just trade you only picks for those. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have vets coming back, and we know what Tibbs does with vets. He plays them a lot. I mean, like, I would love to believe that. I mean, forget guys like Rhymes, Deuce, Cam. I'm not even convinced that, you know, Quickly and Obi are going to get the minutes that they seem to have earned at this point. And I'll add this. One thing I think it's worth mentioning, the Knicks young guys have shown exceptional maturity. I think they all have extreme, like, I never see negative energy from the young guys. We have had young players, by the way, where that was a problem. I think Dennis Smith Jr. was one. I think there's been others. You always see positive energy. Obi Toppin was the 8th overall pick in the draft. Until very recently, for 2 years, he was getting 10 to 15 minutes a game. His energy has never waned. He's never had a bad attitude. Quickly's never had a bad attitude. Obi continues to say all the right things. They're all very polished in press conferences. You've seen especially IQ and RJ take kind of a leadership role as well. You know, there was that clip with RJ with the iPad. There was another clip with IQ yesterday. They both have that ability. I think these are exceptional young people, forget basketball-wise, like leadership-wise. But Quickly, and like RJ was in the situation this year where he was playing for potentially an extension. That is going to be Quickly and Obi next year. And if they're still getting 20 minutes a game, you know, I think, like Berman stated, I think Quickly has always said the right things, and I think deep down they like Tibbs, but Berman said that there had been some rumblings from Quickly's camp that they weren't happy with his role. I would be very surprised if Obi is still doing what he did, you know, behind Randall this year. Like, that's probably going to happen as well, because it's one thing to say they're not getting reps for the development, but by year three, it's I'm not getting reps for my money. And to quote the illustrious Worm, playing with my money is like playing with my emotions. So that is going to be a thing. And I'm hoping they find a way to resolve that for both the kids' sake and for Tip's sake, because when he's forced to play the kids, that's when I see the best, most creative coaching out of him. I think, like, actually, it's weird because he played more conservative schemes with Kemba, with Fournier, with all those guys. But once he gets forced to play Grimes and McBride and Sims, and he knows they can switch more, and he knows they're flawed in many ways, but he knows what they give you, he leans into that. He just will never do it for more than 5 or 10 minutes at a time unless he's forced to. But if they can create that environment, which it feels like such a small, narrow path, but if they can do that, that would really get me excited, more so than like signing Jalen Brunson or, short of a Donovan Mitchell trade, there's nothing that really excites me more than just like letting these guys go. And it's, I mean, like, even like Deuce McBride, like, I got into it with a beat reporter for the Knicks today, and I was talking with him about, you know, should the Knicks have played Deuce McBride at least as a bench backup? And he was saying he shot less than 30% from three. Look at how Deuce McBride shoots. Look at his track record. And then also, if you don't buy any of that, you know, use the Darko tool. You know, if you guys aren't familiar with Darko, it's invented by Kosta Medvedevsky. You know, apologies if I pronounce it wrong. But he tracks the projected shooting based on how people perform. And Deuce is still projected to be a 36% 3-point shooter. Like, there's nothing to indicate this kid can't shoot. Like, even when I liked Frank a lot, even those comparisons seem insulting to Deuce. Because
yes,
he's way more dynamic off the dribble. He's a much better athlete. He's not as big. When he shoots, there's no hesitation. And he has a high release.
Yep.
You look at him shoot, like, yeah, he's shooting less than 30%. Because every time he comes in, he shoots once or twice. And by the way, there was another player on the Knicks who for most of the season was shooting in the low 20s from three. All of a sudden, Julius Randle is out of the lineup. And now that player is shooting 40% from three and going for 40 a game. like, I'm not saying Obi Toppin is a 40% three-point shooter, but I'm saying he's a hell of a lot better than 23 or whatever he was earlier this year. And I just want to see all of them get to show that out. And then from there, we can make our decisions, you know? I feel like even that, like, that to me is the gold. Forget winning a ring. Forget all of that stuff. That to me is the gold standard right now. And it's just tough to see how that, how they can make that come to fruition.
I don't understand that argument about McBride at all because, you know, Marcus Smart's first 4 years, he shot about 29% from three, which is a much larger sample size than McBride. And I know, you know, in the last 4 years, Smart has shot around 34%.
And he, oh, by the way, Smart was also a much worse shooter than McBride in college.
Yeah, McBride, I'm saying, like,
a guy who shot 40% in college. And it's not like you watch him play. These are not like, oh, wide open catch and shoots. Like, he's doing step backs and crazy shit. Like, he can shoot.
When you said that you are ready to trade Randall, is that because of what you saw from Obi at the end?
Not just at the end.
Were you ready 2 weeks ago to get rid of Randall?
I think what happened at the end was a confirmation
of
something that's been coming for a while. But that's the thing. People were like, oh, Obi just dominated some G Leaguers. I was like, he's done that all year. When Obi would get 15 minutes and score like 13 points in 15 minutes, people would be like, well, he can't do that for a whole game. Don't use per 36 stats. And it's like, well, now that he gets 36 minutes, clearly that's not diminishing anything.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good discussion about this on the Strickland Discord. When it comes to things like there's two things that Randall clearly has over Obi by a lot, and those are not trivial things. He's a very switchable defender.
Mm-hmm.
Even going back to last year's playoff series against the Hawks, Randall was actually our best defender against Trae Young. I think he guarded him, I think the tracking data said 15 times. Trae only scored once.
Mm. Wow.
And I mean, I think if you watched, you could see he's very good at switching onto dudes on defense. And he is better than at OB. Like, he's a better ball handler, right?
Oh yeah.
He's probably stronger.
He's a better post player.
I'm not even sure I would agree with that, by the way, but, he's better at creating his own shot and creating opportunities for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the attention he draws, even though I think OB's a much better passer, Randall is able to create more of those opportunities. But the thing is this, if you're going to use, like, is there a great team that uses Randall in that way where he's heavily used as a post-up hub? That's where I'd say no. And I would especially say with this team, that's not what the strengths of the rest of the players are. The strengths of this team and probably, you know, how Randall would best be used is as a role man who can pick and pop, who can make quick decisions on defense. Yeah, like, switching is great, and that is a weakness for Obi, but Obi does everything else better on defense, and it's not even because there's some things that he's more naturally talented at on defense, and that's rim protection. Like, he's legitimately a very good shot blocker and rim protector, but he also just tries harder, and that matters, and Randall doesn't. Like, and it's tough because, like, you know, you want to talk about effort as a thing, like, they can turn it on, but Randall just doesn't turn it on that often. He doesn't try hard on defense. And I think he could be a much better defender than Obi, but he hasn't. And then there is also, on top of that, one thing Obi brings that even when Randall tries, he doesn't have, which is that Randall has short arms and can't jump as high as Obi, so he's not a great rim protector. And so if you put that, who is the better player overall? Maybe it is Randall. But in terms of fitting in with this team and in terms of who we can build around, that difference is much bigger in Obi's favor.
Plus, it's also not just a question of which player is better, but it's also a question of, like, starting next year, Randall at $29 million versus Obi at, I don't know, probably $8 million, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, what Obi's extension will look like, that we're going to have to kick that can down the road for till next year. But that conversation is going to come up, you know, just like RJ's is right now, so... Yeah.
Have you been done with Tibbs? Like, were you ready for him? Like, when, what was it that made you? Because that's quite a, like, a year ago, with whatever concerns there had been, I don't think anybody thought that like a year later you'd be like, Tibbs has to go. Is it strictly like the malpractice with the young players? Is it other things also? Do you think he doesn't have the offensive creativity or willingness to do like what you just talked about, like trying to put, you know, Randall in this better position and put Toppin in a better position? What was it that made you just say, I've already seen enough?
I'm not done with Tibbs, by the way.
Okay. But you're okay if he goes, you don't think it's the wrong move.
I think if Randall and Tibbs come back, there's two things that there's one thing really that could make me turn on the front office. There's another thing that could make me start to be upset because I'm still a believer in this front office. I don't think you can. There are the kind of paradiso I talked about with the young guys being able to run and frolic, right? Cannot happen with Julius Randle on this team. It certainly cannot happen with Julius Randle and It cannot happen with Julius Randle and Tom Thibodeau on this team for sure. Because if Tom Thibodeau comes back with Julius Randle, we're going back to what we did this year. That's not good for anyone. So one of them has to go. That's where I'm at. Does it have to be Tibbs? I think that when he's forced to coach the young players, he does a good job. It's really weird because what you've seen for most of his career is that like he tends to like, you know, when he has, you know, in Minnesota and Chicago for veteran players, like his, you know, being a hard ass can kind of wear off, right? It can grow stale. But the young guys seem to buy in. Even when he left Minnesota, I don't think him and Kat necessarily got along that well, but Wiggins loved him. The young guys in Chicago loved him. And also, like, the Taj Gibson types love him. It's those guys in the middle where I don't know what's happening with him and Randall, but he's unable to get the most out of Randall, which was part mainly Tibbs' selling point. So I'm not out on Tibbs. What might have maybe... And I think I haven't changed my opinion that much because last year, even when the Knicks were winning, I saw him as still a flawed but good coach. I saw him a little bit like I saw Andy Reid when he was on the Eagles, where it's a guy who knows the game extremely well, can game plan, isn't the best at talent evaluation, isn't the best at rotations, and isn't the best at in-game adjustments. But he has great after-timeout plays. Like, he's on defense, he's utilized a lot of creative ways to unlock the most out of guys. Like, he understands that, by the way, like, things like Jericho Sims is probably better at switching than he is in help and drop right now. So he's played into those strengths. He's realized that when I don't have Kemba Walker out there, when I have Emmanuel Quickly and Deuce McBride, I can trap more, I can try to press more, I can be more aggressive. Those are important things. I think he can be successful. I think the front office needs to sit down with him and take away some of the things that he's gone with and make sure that he leans into that. But I think he can be successful. The other thing I'll say is this, right? Like, I think that, so one other thing I'll add is Alvin Gentry was fired or is not going to be retained as the Kings, you know, interim coach. I would love to bring him in as an offensive coordinator. I would love that for Tibbs. But beyond that, I think Tibbs has a very simple philosophy. I think he realized this year that like everyone on the team, including Randall, is better when you run. So for the first half of a lot of games, you see the Knicks run and gun and play with pace. And then you see starting in the third quarter, especially in the games where they have a big lead, they slow down. Because in 1995 or in 2005, that was a worthwhile endeavor, right? Because teams aren't going to catch up. You don't turn the ball over. You don't take bad shots. You don't let them get in transition. And they're not coming back from 20 down. That's no longer the case because of how well teams shoot. And furthermore, on those teams, like when he was doing that in Chicago, he did blow a lot of leads. Shout out Vivek Dadania, who put a good thread on kind of Tibbs' trend of giving up big leads. But, you know, in Chicago, he had a guy named Derrick Rose, who was a great isolation scorer. In Minnesota, he had Kat. And they still, by the way, he had Cat and Jimmy, and they still blew leads, but you had ISO guys. Last year, the version of Julius Randle that was there was good enough, and he also had Derrick Rose as an isolation scorer. This year, he doesn't have, we don't, the Knicks aren't built for that. But it's also an overreaction to, like, I think a lot of the defenses offered of Tibbs are like, well, you know, in the second half, defenses tighten up, you need a closer, you need an ISO guy. And, you know, when on Pod Strickland, we had on Sam Cooper, from who's a Suns fan, right? So we got to see how the other half lives. And he was saying that in the playoffs, that's absolutely true. You need a closer pretty early on. But in the regular season, you can play fast. You can play with pace for four quarters. And that's the strength of this team. And so I think they can meet Tibbs halfway. If they get him someone like Jalen Brunson, or if quickly or RJ emerges, or if they get an isolation scorer in the draft, they can play where they play 3.5 quarters fast. They need to get Tibbs to buy into that. Though it's not, as soon as the second half starts, if you go into a shell, that's bad. But if you can play fast for 3.5 quarters, play with ball movement, do the thing where they've been doing so much, but you get the rebound, Obi's there, right? Obi out there somewhere, right? Just throw it up.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they've been doing. Keep doing, or just push, right? Even Jericho Sims has been pushing the ball a little bit. Keep doing that. Get into your sets quickly, and you know, live with the results. I think that would work out better for this team. And then, you know, to kind of whet Tibbs's appetite, you could also acquire someone like a Brogdon or a Brunson who can give you like some semblance of that ISO scorer to take you home. That's a formula that can work, especially if Tibbs is at least willing to lean into 3/4 of that kind of play.
The quintessential like team with no star that, but was like perfect, like a regular season monster, was the 2011 Nuggets after they traded Carmelo. And they got Gallinari and Chandler and everyone from the Knicks. They were a brilliant, brilliant regular season team. Because I remember George Karl could not stop talking shit, like could not stop being passive aggressive about how much more fun this was than playing.
He hasn't stopped talking
shit. He has not, by the way. He has not stopped talking shit.
I don't know if you've seen, he had like, do you know Ball Don't Stop Us?
Yeah.
Did you see his little tiff with George Karl?
No.
Ball Don't Stop said, Carmelo Anthony is the greatest Nugget of all time over Jokic, which ruffled some feathers. And he also said that Carmelo Anthony is a top 25 player of all time. And George Karl like replied and was like, no. And Ball Don't Stop is a guy who's like, I actually enjoy his stuff. He's very anti-analytics. He tends to favor like he likes quickly actually, but he tends to favor quote unquote real hoopers,
overrated
isolation scorers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like Alonzo Trier is a guy I think he liked a lot.
Right.
And I respect that he kind of sticks to it and he's good at evaluating. I mean, everyone has their niche, but anyway, yeah, it was funny to see George Karl at however old he is, he's still getting into Twitter beefs. So.
I saw it a while ago. He took some other shot at Melo. He has not given up the fight, man. George Karl is gonna
he has his beef. And it's sad because I think he like those Sonics teams, those were some of the first teams I fell in love with.
Those were great teams.
Especially outside the Knicks. Like I remember like when I first started getting into the Knicks, I think the first season I really followed it, the first season I really followed the NBA, the Knicks had Derek Harper as a starting point guard.
Mm-hmm.
They lost the Bulls, I think, in 5 games. And the Bulls made the finals, and I rooted for the Sonics, and they had, I mean, that was a fun team. They had Gary Payton, Hersey Hawkins, Detlef Schrempf. I mean, Kemp was, I was thinking of a Sean Kemp comp for Obi Toppin, which I'd be curious on your thoughts on that.
Mm.
But that was just such a fun team, and George Karl led that, and those Nuggets teams were fun, and it seems like he has a lot of bitterness, but I think he was a hell of a coach.
That Sonics team in 96 was, along with the Knicks, the only teams that year who beat the Bulls more than once. Let me think about the Obi kind of thing. But while I do that, why don't I give you a message from our new friends at Credit Karma. Paying down debt can be stressful, especially when you need to keep track of multiple monthly payment dates. God knows I struggle with that. If you're tired of juggling due dates, consolidating with a personal loan could be your answer. That way you'll just have one due date a month, and Credit Karma can help you find the best option for you. I'll be honest with our audience. You know, we read all these glamorous ads and you probably think like, oh my God, they must get comped and swag and all this free stuff. But not really. It's not actually like that in the real world of sports podcasting. But I can say personally, I have used Credit Karma myself in the past, and I do like their service. They're very helpful, giving you your credit report every month for free. Not just your report, but they'll show you, like, you know, graphs and ways you can improve what you're doing. And they even break down for you, like, if you have issues working against your credit, which of them are high risk, which of them are medium, which of them are low. So they actually give you kind of a sense of how to attack it if you want to improve it. Comparing loan offers on Credit Karma is 100% free. It will not affect your credit scores, and it could save you money. So if you feel ready to apply, head to creditkarma.com/loan offers to see personalized offers. Again, that's creditkarma.com/loan offers to find a loan for you. For those of you in the back of the class not listening, that's creditkarma.com/loan offers. Obi Toppin and Sean Kemp. I wrote about this in the last recap that I did for, I think, the Strickland. I think the one I did last night. I have never seen an athlete like Obi Toppin on the Knicks. There are different kinds of ways I think that people define athleticism. It's usually like hops or your quicks or like midair, you know, ballet kind of stuff. And there's always, the Knicks have had people who can do all those things. Nate Robinson can be pretty quick with the ball. You know, certainly Jamal Crawford could too. And we've seen
James White, Flight White.
Flight White, you know, he was so fast, I barely remember him out there. And, but also they've had great leapers. J.R. Smith was a great leaper.
Sprewell is a really good athlete.
Sprewell, yeah.
Sprewell was my first favorite Nick.
McDice, before he was getting injured, was an athletic marvel. But in terms of a guy who I don't think I've ever seen a guy who's all of those things. Like, he's 6'9". He's really like a Greek, like, fucking character. Like, he's 6'9". He's the fastest person on the floor. And you know every night in the scouting report, especially when Randall was out and you knew Toppin was going to play, every single team knows, all right, Obi likes to run out. And there's still nothing. It's like in baseball, in the mid-'80s, there was a stretch. If I remember right, Vince Coleman stole like 80 consecutive bases safely against the Mets. Like, they could never, ever, ever throw Vince Coleman out. You knew he was going. You would pitch out. Didn't matter. Obi, he's that fast. He obviously has the verticality. We've talked before about his just preternatural ability to jump in the air, and where 99% of players would commit a charging foul or contort themselves and miss the shot, Toppin somehow just seems to cut through the air. No problem. I've never seen someone like him. In that sense, Kemp is, he has similarities to Kemp. Kemp had a jumper. You weren't like worried about him making it all day, but like he could hit some
Obi's stuff. Been shooting the ball though.
Obi has been drilling the ball. There's something very funny to me, just because I like numbers and metaphor, of Toppin ending the season with the same 3-point percentage as Randall, and Barrett would have passed him for the team lead in scoring if he had not missed the last couple, if he had not gotten hurt at the end. He would have passed him. He needed like 45 in his last two games. The way he was going, you knew he was going to get that. So I'm really interested in the, I talked to you about this a little bit off the air beforehand, and I wrote about it in the last recap, like, just with all the questions that I have about the team, I haven't felt most of the season like they can or should trade Randall. And I still wonder, I have a feeling he's going to be gone. I have a feeling that, and I don't think this is a flaw of a person. I think, I can't remember who it was. Leon Rose came out the other day and finally talked, and Someone else did. I can't think if it was that, but someone used the word sensitive to describe Randall, and I realized that, like, not to dismiss things that Randall has done that I think he just handled poorly, but it struck me when writing about Randall that, like, everyone saw Randall 2 years ago. This happened with A-Rod. A-Rod signed an enormous deal. He felt pressure to live up to it. He cheated. He signed a bigger deal, and everyone was shocked after when he cheated again. And it's like, well, of course he cheated again. You already know he has obviously issues with anxiety and performance. So 2 years ago, we all saw Randall kind of melt down trying to live up to being the guy making $19 million a year on the Knicks. And he talked about that in the piece he wrote last season for the Players Tribune. I think it's entirely possible, if not likely, that, like, this year Randall struggled with being the guy making $29 million a year playing for the Knicks. And I think he wants out. I don't think he's wrong for that. I don't think everyone is, just like everyone's not cut out to live and work in New York City just in a 9-to-5 sense. Like, everyone is not cut out to say, I get paid a lot, so boo me, you know, a month into the season and send my wife shit. Like, not everyone, some people don't want that. I want things to work out for Randall, but I'm really having, like, so many thoughts about directions this team could go if they started Toppin instead. And in conjunction with that, I think, signed a center who can shoot a little, just for spacing. I think if you had a five who can shoot, Toppin, Barrett, maybe Grimes, and Quickly. It's not the biggest team, but I feel like that team would give a lot of teams trouble getting out on the run and just blowing teams out offensively.
Yeah, I mean, would Tibbs lean into that is a question.
That's another huge... I mean, that's the other thing that I meant to get to. Like, I think Berman wrote a piece today where Berman acknowledged that he was writing about the veteran-young divide, and Berman stopped and was like, to be fair, like, every practice before practice, Tibbs is out there with all the young guys, specifically, like, running through plays with them. And even Berman wrote that, like, you know, if you want to talk all the time about, you know, Tibbs doesn't work with young guys, Tibbs isn't developing the youth. I mean, where do we draw the line on where he gets credit and where he doesn't? Because if we loved Tibbs, especially I feel like if this was last season, and if last season Toppin and Quickly didn't really play, and then at the end of the year they started playing, I know that's not what happened, and I know that changes the context of everything, but Thibodeau is not, like you said, like, he's not stupid. He's not, you know, he's not in over his head, obviously. But I feel like if you go into a season and you're thinking going into the season is one of our biggest needs is for Tom Thibodeau to really change up a lot of how he does things, you already know what kind of season you're headed into.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I mean with would he be, like, if the Knicks traded, I kind of almost want the Knicks to trade Derrick Rose just to see if Tibbs...
He would quit the next day.
But he might. You're joking. But we have seen coaches quit over those kind of things. We've seen Donnie Walsh quit basically because of the Mello trade.
Right.
Meadow. Like the Sopranos. but you know that, like, it'd be like, are you willing to coach Quickly? And because the thing is, when he has to coach them, he leans into everything we want him to do. But I don't. Is that what you want to do, or would you prefer, like, you know, would you prefer a team with like maybe he'd be the best coach for the Lakers right now, right? He could coach AD and Dwight and all those guys to be an elite defense. This is not me selling the. Actually, maybe that'd be perfect, right? Maybe that's what I should do, because the Lakers are looking at one Juwan Howard as their next head coach.
Are they?
Yeah, wow. And I don't want that to happen. I think most Michigan fans who aren't racist assholes also don't want that to happen.
Right.
But, you know, so maybe I should, maybe Tibbs has to be the sacrificial lamb. That aside, but I think he would be a good fit on that kind of a team. Give him a heavy isolation scorer, a team of smart players who can play a scheme and protect the rim, play at a slow pace and score in the half court. That's his ideal team, who he likes. But a funny thing happened on the way to the Tibbs role. Maybe he realized maybe the real ideal Tibbs team was the young kids he made along the way, you know, or he met along the way. Because he's really good at coaching the kids. I actually think that when he's forced to play them. And I think he likes them. I think all of these kids, there's people who post pictures of him hugging Quickly or like Obi praising him and be like, see, like you all say he hates the kids. I was like, I don't think he actually personally hates the kids. He just doesn't fucking play them over players that they're better than for reasons that are unclear to me. But if he didn't have that option, maybe it'd be great. Or maybe he wouldn't. I would love to for the front office to put that to the test. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they have to trade all of the vets. I think keeping one of Fournier and Burks would be good. I would trade Noel. I would trade Derek. It would hurt me to trade Derek Rose because I appreciate what he's done. I think he's a great fit in New York. I think he's great for these kids. But I also think if we traded him to a place like Dallas, Dallas will get a lot more use out of Derek Rose than we will. Why? Because for Dallas, they have Luka. They don't need Derrick Rose to play 50 games a year. They need him, but they do need him to play, you know, whatever they play in the playoffs, right? Having him off the bench as a playoff guard while Luka rests, that's massive to a team like Dallas. And we cannot tap into that value from Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose would have come back and played if we made the playoffs.
Yeah, I do too.
So I think he still has that value, but that's diminishing, and we cannot extract that value right now. So we might as well get what we can for it, as good as his leadership and all of that is. So, but I think I would put Tibbs to the test. And if he says I want to leave, I don't want to coach, then you promote. I mean, I think no matter what, I would hope Leon Rose is on the phone with Alvin Gentry right now. And maybe Gentry thinks that, maybe Gentry thinks he can get a head coaching job, or, you know, that would be beneath him. I don't know. I don't know if he personally gets along with Thibodeau, but whether it's Thibodeau that gets promoted or in the very, what seems like the very unlikely chance that Johnny Bryant gets promoted, well, he's also a first time coach. He could use an offensive coordinator who has head coaching experience. I think hiring Alvin Gentry would help a lot of that too.
Be cool if they brought back D'Antoni for that.
I would love that.
Yeah, I don't think it would happen, but
it definitely seems to me like there's probably burned bridges.
Yes,
you know, with Dolan and all that. So, I mean, stranger things have happened. I wouldn't bet on it.
Did you ever play Tetris when you were young?
Yes.
Okay, so you remember in Tetris that, you know, you're building, and when you would get the line and get it down and get a Tetris, like it just opened up like everything.
Yep.
I feel like the Knicks roster Tetris this offseason, and not because the player himself deserves to be traded, because I think he's done everything they've asked him to do in his 2 years here. I think Burks has to get traded. I think Randall might get traded. I think Burks has to get traded because I think there's no chance that they trade Rose, because I don't think Thibodeau will let it happen. And I think they need, for the young kids to be able to get more playing time in Tibbs's world, you know, I think Burks is in front of people too much. Not that he doesn't deserve, you know, I'm not saying Burks doesn't deserve his spot, but I don't think that Thibodeau can be trusted to play the best lineups, because he'll just keep playing Burks. But I think Burks should be traded, because I think that forces people into opportunities that they would not otherwise get.
Yeah, and to be clear, like when you talk about playing Burks, the bad lineups are starting point guard.
Yes. Yeah.
That's really it.
Yeah.
I don't mind him at starting shooting guard
or backup.
And I don't even mind him as a backup point guard if he is playing against bench units. He can, like every that's funny. Mm. That's the funny thing to me is like everything that people have said about Quickly, he's just like Jamal Crawford, he's just like Lou Williams, like that actually describes Burks. Like he's fine as a backup point guard. He's fine at playing that as a, you know, as a changeup. But also the Knicks have two promising, I think Deuce is a promising young point guard. And they have Quickly. And they have Rokas Jokubaitis, who at some point I would like to bring over and see what he can do.
Has he announced what he's doing next season?
He basically said that he like
he's not coming unless he has an opportunity like to play. Yeah. Okay.
So I think he's willing to stay there two more years, which is I think he's still happy to be on the Knicks. We can use that contract. We can also, Rubio played 2 years, a young man. There is funny. Somebody was like, I just don't see it. Like, guys who stay overseas after getting picked don't do well. I was like, you ever heard of Manu Ginobili? Yeah, he played 3 more years. He had a pretty decent career, I think, once he came here.
How old is Jokubaitis?
23? I want to say 21.
Oh,
he's
wow.
Not that old.
Oh, wow.
And he's extremely productive. Yeah, he's 21.
Wow.
Jesus, I feel old also, but he is born 3 years to the day younger than my sister, who's 8 years younger than me. So, yeah, I feel very old, but also he's a Scorpio for those that.
I'm a Scorpio, so I'll take it.
When's your birthday?
Scorpios love Scorpios.
When's your birthday?
November 10th.
Oh, yeah. So he's November 19th.
Okay.
My sister comes off as a Scorpio, but that's also because she's someone I happen to be in a lot of conflict situations with. I don't know if Rokas Jokubaitis would come across the same way. But anyway,
we'll find out soon.
He's very young.
Yeah.
He's extremely productive at a young age. The indicators he has are the same indicators you've seen from guys, everyone from Rubio to Luka Doncic. The point is, I'm not saying he's going to be Luka Doncic, but Dragic is a guy he gets compared to. Like, it seems very, very likely that he'll be a productive NBA player. McBride, I have given my thoughts, but I think it's very likely he's at least a rotation player. Quickly, we know what he could do. So, at that point, and Rose's value is only going to get diminished. He is a point guard that relies on athleticism. He's incredibly crafty and smart. I love what he's done with this game. And it's shitty to say, like, I hate having to say, the same way I hate having to say we have to trade Drip Burks, I hate having to say that we need to trade Bros, but I think, A, that's just the way to get the most value you can, because realistically, I don't think we're, like, the value that he brings to me at this point in his career is a guy that, like, plays 30 to 40 games in the regular season and then, like, can be someone like to back up a Luka or a Jason Tatum,
yeah,
or a Giannis and lead the bench units while those guys rest in the playoffs and be awesome at it. Mm-hmm. Like he would be awesome in that role, but we cannot do that because we don't have that guy. Right. So, and we're not going to have that guy for the next 2 or 3 years, whether that's IQ or RJ developing to that, or whether that's trading, it just isn't here yet. So, I would say Rose is the priority, and I would trade one of Burks or Fournier. I think what you said about Burks is a fair point. You know, like, is Tibbs going to continue to play him a point guard? You have to hope not, though. And, like, at some point, we have to stop. Like, a lot of the things, like, I was talking to people today, and I was like, what would you have done differently if you were Rose? Some people said, or sorry, when I say Rose, I mean Leon Rose.
Yeah.
And some people were like, he should have traded for DeRozan, which I actually think, as much as I'm not sure DeRozan would have fit that well, especially if we kept Randall.
Yeah, there's no way he would have.
He's an extremely talented player who's going to be all NBA. Like, I you can't just discount that, and I won't. So I'm going to, but a lot of what people said was like, they shouldn't have signed Kemba. And it's like, well, they gave Kemba $8 million a year. Like, if you can't trust your coach to know who to play, you know, they shouldn't have signed Fournier. Well, they signed Fournier for the going rate for shooters of that caliber, right? He is.
Yeah, top that 10 contract has always been fair.
It's fair. It's not a great contract, but it's fair.
Yeah.
It's the market rate for, and he is, to be clear, Quentin Grimes is awesome. Quickly has been great. Burks has been great as a shooter from three. Mm-hmm. Fournier is by far the Knicks' best shooter. He is.
Yes.
And he is orders of magnitude better than Reggie Bullock. Let's not get it twisted. And then Burks for $10 million a year is a great deal. Noel was not a great deal, but that wasn't crippling. So,
Joakim Noah off the books.
Yeah. It was, I mean, this is now a tangent, but my best friend, one of my best friends is a huge Lakers fan. He grew up in San Diego. And it's interesting how many parallels there have been with their team and ours. You know, they have a player named LeBron James who is basically like Julius Randle, except slightly more accomplished in his career, just a little bit.
Depends how you look at it.
But they run their offense through a big. They have had difficulties at the point guard position. When watching them, I have always felt that they have a young guy who's a great defender in Austin Reeves that reminds me of McBride, who they could have started. Or they have Malik Monk, who's a great shooter, not a quote-unquote true point guard. But I think they're much better offensively with him there. They have had inconsistency in the backcourt. They haven't had enough two-way players. They don't really have, besides really LeBron, like that two-way wing. You know, and then it's even down to like, we were all talking about Noah. They just got off Luol Deng's contract.
You know?
There's even the Tibbs connection there. So, and of course, and beyond that, there's also like, because those are the two biggest markets, those are the nuts that ESPN is always hanging off of. It's interesting to think about how many similarities we have besides the small difference of 15 rings. But hey, there's time to catch up.
Let me close asking you this question and feel free to take it however you want to, but how many young guys who should play is too many young guys who should play? Because the Knicks are not next year, regardless of what they do with Randall, even if they trade him, the Knicks are not going into next year thinking like, we'll just develop all our kids and regardless of record, like they want to get at least into the play-in, I think, if not back into the playoffs. When you mentioned McBride, Jokubaitis I'll leave out because whatever. Quickly, Rose, someone else I'm not thinking of. McBride, Quickly, Rose. Like, are you cool if the Knicks come back next year and have that's your point guard, your point guard depth chart? They don't add anybody, not in the draft, not in free agency.
Can you repeat the point guard depth chart?
McBride, Quickly, and Rose, and if Burks is still there, you know, maybe spot duty.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I would actually prefer to trade Rose.
So, I'm wondering, like, the Knicks have, is it three picks in this draft? One in the first and two in the second, I think. Like, they're probably going to add a draft pick. They're going to want to sign somebody. If you have 10 players, 25 and under, who all should play, can that work? Does that work anywhere in the league? And can it work in New York?
10 young players?
Yeah, like a because everybody wants to play. And like you said earlier, like, every year somebody's coming up on needing their minutes and their numbers because they're, you know, they have an option coming up or they can be restricted or unrestricted in a year. Like, I feel like, you know, when Superman flies above the earth and he can hear like all the conversations on Twitter, I feel like the noise that comes through everything, no matter what people's complaint is about the Knicks, and there's a lot of different complaints about them, everybody wants young players, X, Y, Z, 1, 2, 3 to play more. And I get it. But if either you're arguing for like 10 young guys to all be balancing minutes and I don't know if that works. Somehow I'm worried that you can have too many young players who all need opportunity. And if you can't satisfy it, you might as well have, you know, that seems like a more is less kind of thing.
It's definitely a weird situation. It's unprecedented.
It's weird, yeah.
There are teams that play a lot of young guys, but they're actively tanking teams, like the Thunder. I think part of what makes it weird is that these 10 guys are good enough to compete for play-in, you know? That wouldn't be a tanking team if you played those 10 guys. And a part of that is because the Knicks do have older young players, older guys who are in their rookie deals, right? Toppin, I think, will be 24 next year. Mm-hmm. Quickly will be 23. RJ will be 22.
22 next year, yeah.
Jericho Sims is only in his second year, but he'll be 23. Mitch will be 23 if he comes back, right? Mm-hmm. McBride was so, and I think that's an important thing because when you look at the Knicks draft, there's a guy named Shaedon Sharpe who I love, by the way, for example, but he didn't play college. He went to Kentucky, or he committed to Kentucky, but if he goes to the draft, he won't have played at all in college. And I'm not sure that the Knicks would target someone like that because they haven't drafted a freshman yet with this front office. They have drafted. Their sweet spot seems to be 2 or 3 year guys like Quickly, Grimes, McBride. Mm-hmm. But they've also drafted, you know, older guys like Obi and Sims, right? Sims was a 4 year player. Mm-hmm. So I think they like those guys. So this is a team that could, I don't want to say compete for a title, but it would be maybe something like the Raptors this year. I think that's probably the closest model. The Raptors have a lot of young guys. And then Siakam and Van Vliet. But the rest of them are, you know, they play 6, 7, 8 guys who are under 25. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, could they do that? I think they could. The question is, how do you do that while getting fair value for Fournier, Burks, Noel, Kemba, and Randall? Or at least 75, 80 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. But I think that should be their goal. And could it work with all of them? Yeah, I think it could. I think the other part of that then is like Tibbs is the kind of coach that he wants to give his best players 36, 37, 38 minutes. I think for multiple reasons. Number one being, I think if you play the young guys the Knicks have, they have to run. They're all better in transition. They're all better in a fast-paced offense. They're all better at being aggressive, forcing turnovers. They're all better playing with high energy. Like, I would worry about Obi playing 40 minutes like he did it yesterday. And he might just be that guy where he is the Energizer Bunny, or you know, he just has a natural constant cocaine high where he's never going to stop running. But I would worry about, you know, like, yeah, play him 30 and maybe he'll be even more energetic. Same with IQ. Definitely same with RJ, because I think that has made a difference with RJ. Like, he does get fatigued, and his defensive effort has waned this year at times. I think it would come down to Tibbs being willing to say that my top guys are going to play 30 to 33 minutes and my bottom guys are going to play 18 to 20 minutes. It would solve both of those issues. A, I think they would be more effective because they'd really be able to play balls to the wall all game. Mm-hmm. And B, it would solve the problem that you mentioned where, you know, the guys, you wouldn't have so many of these minutes issues, or, you know, guys. And I think it's, there are going to be guys where they need to show out next year, right? Cam and RJ are both going to be in a contract year, essentially. OB and IQ are going to be in a year where they could be eligible for extension, and it is kind of a prove it year for them too. You know, the analogy for me would be OB and IQ are entering their sophomore year of college, high school, you know, if you're talking about the college rat race, and RJ and Cam are entering their junior year where, like, that's the main one. And then you have other guys who, you know, you can probably prioritize accordingly. Like, I don't think if Deuce or Sims or Grimes doesn't get huge minutes next year, it's not going to be a problem. in that sense. But that's how I think in general, like being able playing fast, playing hard, and subbing liberally, which are not what Tom Thibodeau wants to do, solve both those problems.
I'm very interested in your question about what fair value would look like for some of the Knicks veterans who might go out in a trade. We will explore that question in the next episode of Believe Knicks Pod, but that will be all for episode 24. Want to mention again the Believe Knicks Show podcast extraordinaire is presented by Bet Online. It is also presented by Matthew Miranda and Stacey Patton. So from both of us to all of you, thank you again for being with us, and we'll talk to you about some of the Knicks veterans later in the week. Peace.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.